Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up on our show later, we talk with Wilco's Jeff Tweedy about their new record. But to begin today, there's a growing number of British singers, from Joss Stone to Amy Winehouse, whom you're hearing now, who are taking over the pop charts here in the States. Just don't call it a British invasion. While these artists were born on British soil, a listen to their music reveals that they were raised on American sounds. To get the story behind this influx of Brit singers, we're joined by Oliver Wang, who writes about soul and hip-hop for the LA Times and NPR, and Ann Powers, who's written the New Chanteuse series for the LA Times. Both join us by phone from LA. Oliver, let me begin with you. Amy Winehouse's Back to Black, highest ever debut for an English female singer at number 7, and then 1 week later, Joss Stone debuts at number 2. Why are they all coming out of the woodwork right now?
Well, I think it's probably just a coincidence in timing. Winehouse probably in any other time of year would have enjoyed that record for a little bit longer, but having Stone follow up with her so close just kind of knocked that mark right off right after that.
But you listen to this music, and, you know, one after another, these singers are coming from the UK, not from the US. Why? What's happening there?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, and I'm not completely sure. I don't think it's a uniquely British phenomena, because if you look at other artists such as Joy Denalane, who's from Germany, Nicole Willis, who's from Finland, they all fit into the same kind of retro soul movement that Stone and especially, I think, Winehouse are tapping into. I do think that part of what the success they're meeting is because they're providing an alternative for people who are interested in R&B and soul, but may not connect necessarily with kind of the post-Beyonce sound of R&B and American soul going on right now with people like Rihanna and Ciara and whatnot.
So do you think that there's kind of a special fascination because people like Amy Winehouse, Joss Stone, that they're British doing this and that they're white and young and they're doing this kind of older black American style?
I think that exoticism is, or at least the unusualness of it, is part of it. I don't know how to quantify to what extent that explains their success, but I do think that they strike people as someone unusual, especially in the case of Winehouse, who has been portrayed as this kind of exotic, controversial figure, and there's a lot of tabloid interest in her beyond just her musical career, and that has at least helped her, I think, get out into the public view so that people are willing to check out her music to begin with.
Right. Well, she certainly does cut a striking figure in the pop music scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, kind of hard-drinking, hard-partying young Jewish girl from, where is it, North London or something like that?
And her song Rehab is really connected with people in the U.S. cross-genre. You find rockers and rappers both finding something to connect with that. So I think that says a lot about Americans or American culture as well, that a song like Rehab would have such resonance.
Well, let's hear a little bit of it. Rehab is one of the hits for young Amy Winehouse from the U.K.
Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, just try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go. I'd rather be at home with Ray. I ain't got 17.
That's Amy Winehouse and Rehab. She is leading the way, along with singers like Joss Stone and perhaps Lily Allen and a couple of others we can mention. An invasion of blue-eyed soul, perhaps, from the UK to the shores of the US. And we've been speaking with Oliver Wong, music journalist and associate professor of sociology at Cal State Long Beach. And also with us on the phone from L.A. is our old friend Ann Powers, pop critic for the L.A. Times. And some critics are saying that you can't call this a British invasion because it doesn't have a new or distinctly British sound. Would you agree?
Well, you know, first I'll say that Candia Crazy Horse, who's a writer, a great music writer, wrote a piece in which she talked a lot about this as a phenomenon of racism. And I think she does have some valid points, like why are these white artists succeeding where African-American artists haven't. But you do have to acknowledge that soul music in England has been a huge phenomenon since soul music was invented. I mean, the Northern Soul Clubs of Northern England, towns like Manchester, Liverpool, Leeds, were a huge phenomenon in the 60s, and that's sort of how the Beatles, partly how the Beatles got their sound, a lot of the original British invasion bands. When I talk to these singers, it's interesting, actually, Corinne Bailey Ray, who's not usually lumped in with these singers, she grew up listening to Northern soul music that her dad loved. So it is roots music for these kids. It's not like they, you know, had to fly across the country and go to a cool record store in New York to hear it. It was the music of their parents.
Well, now, you mentioned the first British invasion, you know, the Beatles and the Stones and Eric Clapton. I mean, these guys all came to America and thought they were coming to a country that was awash in old country blues. You know, they thought they were bringing, you know, our sounds back to us. And the same thing with, you know, the Clash and the Sex Pistols in the 70s. Punk started here. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little more, we're living in a, as Oliver, who, by the way, introduced me to Amy Winehouse, and I thank you for that, Oliver. As he said, it's a global phenomenon now. I mean, you have artists in Scandinavia who are making soul music. You also have American blue-eyed soul artists. Like, there's a guy that Oliver likes or has written about recently named Mark Broussard, who's got a new record out that's pretty interesting. So I don't know if you can talk about that kind of international exchange in the same way because of the age of the Internet. Everything moves so fast, and those boundaries have melted down. It's harder to maintain a mythology now.
Right, but I guess there does seem to it's reached a critical mass somehow.
Yeah,
just recently.
In a way, I mean, Amy Winehouse is kind of the leader at the moment, I think. Joss Stone is a little bit different. One interesting thing about Joss Stone is that she's the one who's the most often accused of sort of minstrelsy, essentially, you know, of imitating something that's not hers. But she's also the one who's worked most closely with African-American musicians. Her first record was produced by Betty Wright, the great soul singer. Her most recent record was a collaboration with Raphael Sadiq, who was in the group Tony, and has been a longtime neo-soul artist. So it's always a little bit complicated. And one thing I found with these artists in talking to them is that whether they're deluded or not, they're very sincere in thinking this music belongs to them as much as it belongs to anyone else. You can criticize them for that, but that's definitely what they believe.
So Joss Stone, young, from a fairly wealthy background, white,
hot,
living in the UK.
Yeah, tall,
hot,
very
hot.
Tall.
Does that qualify her to sing soul music, to sound like, you know, the girl who got left out of the prom? Well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But she sure brings it on this song called Tell Me About It.
3 times a day, 4 times a day. You gotta let me know.
All right, now Joss Stone's record called Introducing Joss Stone debuted at number 2 here in the U.S. We are talking about the wave of retro soul singers coming to the States from the UK with Ann Powers and with Oliver Wong, both on the phone with us from LA. Oliver, Ann was mentioning Candia Crazy Horse's article on this trend, you know, with its suggestion of, you know, a kind of subtle racism that these are white singers who are getting attention for an African-American form of music. Here in the States, you have people like Erykah Badu and Jill Scott. I mean, they're soul-oriented singers as well. How different is the music that we're hearing from the UK from what those singers are doing?
Well, I think in terms of, I know this might be splitting hairs, I think the difference between neo-soul and retro-soul is that neo-soul is what we associate with Jill Scott and Erykah Badu and D'Angelo, and to me, retro-soul is much more about trying to replicate the kinds of production styles and sound of Motown and Stax and 60s, early 70s R&B production. And really the leader, the person who's really been the leader in this has not been a Brit, has actually been an African-American singer from New York City, Sharon Jones, whose backing band, the Dap Kings, are also Amy Winehouse's backing band on Back to Black and her touring band. And I think the issue of race enters into it is not so much, I think what Anne was sort of touching on is this question of, do they have the right to this music? To me, those issues of ownership, I think, are very complicated and are not that useful. I think the more interesting question to me is, why is it that someone like Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, who've always been pretty much niche players and have a cult following, not gotten the same kind of mass market attention that someone like Amy Winehouse does when they're basically playing with the exact same band and putting out very similar music.
Right, and both looking back to, as you say, those kind of classic charts from the Stax Records,
right,
which, you know, is now back in business and Motown. We've actually
also ageism. Sharon Jones is in her 50s.
Right, Sharon is in her 50s. Actually, she's been here on Soundcheck performing with the Dap Kings. Here's a little bit of Sharon Jones, just so people know who we're talking about. The song's All Over Again.
You think there ain't nothing about you that I ain't realized, but every time I see you, but every time I see you, darling, but every time I see you,
all right, Sharon Jones, African-American, 50-something, now living here in New York, but originally from the South, and playing with the Dap Kings, the band that is now touring around with Amy Winehouse, the young white British singer who's making a huge splash with a very similar kind of music. We're talking with Oliver Wong, Ann Powers. Ann, you were trying to say something before we went to that music.
Oh, just that, you know, ageism does factor in, and when you look at these African-American women who are sort of always associated with revival of their own careers, like Betty LeVette is another one. She has a really cool new record coming out where the Drive-By Truckers, the band from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, the white band, the leader of that band is the son of a session player who played on some of the great 60s soul records. Anyway, she's got a great record coming out, but she's 62, so can we think of her as new? I think Amy Winehouse being 23 or whatever, youth does have a lot of power in our culture, and that's just sort of unavoidable in a way. It's we can complain about it, but it is what sells. And I do think Amy Winehouse at least has thought about these issues. I mean, when I met her, I was impressed with her kind of her studied air. Like, she's got this reputation as a wild child, and maybe she is, but when it comes to her music, she's really thought about it. So I appreciate that.
Oliver, when you interview Joss Stone or Amy Winehouse, you find that, you know, there is a lot of American influence, but that there's also an exception, and that might be one of the original blue-eyed soul singers, Dusty Springfield. I mean, are we seeing kind of the second coming of Dusty Springfield in Amy Winehouse and that whole crew?
Well, I would say it's a little different, because when I think of Dusty, I think of someone whose music has sort of this sincerity and innocence to it, in a way that you listen to Winehouse's music or Lily Allen's, and they're very irreverent and sardonic and ironic and winking. And so as songwriters, I don't see them as being very similar, though certainly musically speaking, in terms of the ways in which they're working with these classic soul and R&B aesthetics, yeah, you can make that comparison. And obviously Dusty Springfield looms very large within our understandings of British blue-eyed soul singers and whatnot.
And
within their their own lives. Like Joss Stone didn't want to sing Son of a Preacher Man for a long time, Dusty's great hit, because she had grown up with it. It was like her personal national anthem. So, you know, she avoided it for a long time, but of course she finally gave in and did sing it.
So we're talking about almost exclusively women, but there are men doing, I mean, Richard Hawley in the UK from Sheffield, you know, another kind of blue-eyed soul singer.
James Hunter. There's a guy named James Hunter who's making some pretty powerful blue-eyed soul coming out of England also.
But we're only hearing the women. Why do you think that is?
Oh, well.
I think it's the age hotness factor that Anne was alluding to.
Right.
I don't know. I mean,
the voice of reason. Thank you, Oliver.
It's hotness, but you know, it's not like James Hunter is unhot in some people's opinions anyway. But I think also flexibility. We allow women a certain kind of flexibility to cross genres often, I think. And maybe that's what it is. I mean, they can sort of carry forth across the race genre in a way that maybe now we wouldn't allow. Hip-hop was such a strong vision of black masculinity. It's something that very few artists have been able to quote invade, and so maybe white artists. And so maybe it's similar with R&B now. I don't know. That's a theory.
I would also add that in the case of Winehouse and Josh and Lily Allen, they've all also made very, I think, strategic and smart move to do collaborations with American hip-hop artists, and that's helped gain them prominence in ways that has not happened with some of the male artists we've been talking about.
All right, now, Oliver...
And we do have to mention Mark Ronson, the white... British-born, but American, half-American, I think, producer who's really worked with several of these artists, Amy and Lily Allen, and is a big part of the sound also.
All right, now, both of you have mentioned Lily Allen. There's also Corinne Bailey-Ray. I mean, where, Oliver, do they fit in? Is this neo-soul rather than retro-soul?
You know, like I said, I think after a while you're just kind of splitting hairs in terms of the difference with it. I think it's, to me, the main thing that distinguishes it is really, are they going for an aesthetic that's influenced by the past or is really trying to replicate the past? And that's where I make the difference. But, you know, to the average listener, I don't think this is, I don't know if this is something that they really sit there and parse apart in terms of the distinction.
But so Lily Allen, yet another member of this wave of great English women who are bringing some very familiar American sounds back to our shores from the UK. We've been speaking with Oliver Wong by phone from L.A., music journalist for the L.A. Times and NPR, Ann Powers, pop critic for the L.A. Times. To the two of you, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Still
See
to come.
See you
soon.
Thanks to both of you. And still to come today, Wilco frontman and founder Jeff Tweedy joins us in a moment to talk about his band's new, kind of older, mellow sound and why it's being used to sell Volkswagens. And later we'll find out what an up-and-coming Dutch composer like Michel van der A is doing at the Lincoln Center Theater Workshop. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Wilco shed its alt-country label back in 2002 and made its mark with the experimental sounds and music industry drama of this album, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. With their follow-up, they pushed pop boundaries even further. But on their new CD, Wilco reaches back into rock's past.
Oh, the band marched on in formation. The brass was phasing.
The album is called Sky Blue Sky, and on it Wilco opts for epic guitar solos and lyrics that find frontman and songwriter Jeff Tweedy in a mellow tone. Jeff Tweedy, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, so it's a pretty dramatic change in the sound of the band between those two records. What happened?
I don't hear it as dramatic as other people do, to be honest with you. I think that there are elements that are very consistent between the last three records. The biggest difference, I think, is which song was first on the record.
Because Yankee Hotel Foxtrot led off with this thing that had all kinds of layered, unusual sounds.
If Yankee Hotel Foxtrot had led off with Jesus, Etc., I bet people would probably be hearing a lot more similarities between the records.
But Sky Blue Sky has a sound that looks back to kind of 70s soft rock. I mean, we had a couple of your colleagues from Wilco who formed this band Autumn Defense playing here in the studio a couple of months ago. And very candidly saying, yeah, we like the sound of 70s soft rock, well, Autumn, Red, America, bands like that.
Autumn Defense is definitely looking back at that stuff. I don't know if Wilco is consciously doing that, but those guys are in Wilco, so there's lots of different things that come out in the way that we play together. I think that the Sky Blue Sky is more than anything a lot of common ground, finding the common ground between six musicians that are a certain age and have a certain interest in music for a certain amount of time.
Well, and it's also the same six guys, and that's that's a big thing to point out, too.
Right. The same, it's the most consistent lineup of Wilco.
Now, for the first time, your music is being used in TV ads. Volkswagen is using two songs?
They're using they've licensed a fair amount of songs. I'm not sure if it's five or six, but it's not the first time. We've done that before.
With Volkswagen?
Not with Volkswagen,
oh, okay.
But with other companies. We've licensed songs for movies, licensed songs for commercials. It's gotten a lot of attention, and I can't it's a tempest in a teapot. I don't have any understanding of why, you know, really.
Well, but isn't that, I mean, it seems like that's the way to get music exposed these days, you know, when radio play can be so hard to come by.
It's one way, definitely, and it's a way that, is more available to us than the radio, you know, ironically.
That is ironic. and do you put that on, I mean, the first week you sold 87,000 copies, debuted at number four on the Billboard album charts. It was the biggest first week sales that Wilco has ever had. Do you put that off to the exposure that you get on these TV ads?
The TV ads happened after the first week.
Oh, okay.
So, no, I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think, you know, all of our records are available on our website to listen to, streaming all the time. The record that just came out had been available online for several months, you know. So I don't know. I attribute it to people being able to hear it and maybe liking it.
Maybe. Jeff Tweedy is a singer and frontman for the band Wilco, and this is the new record, Sky Blue Sky.
Changed my plans so many times. My heart has been outgrown. Now everybody's feeling all alone. Can't tell you who I am. When everybody's feeling all alone, can't tell you.
The song is called You Were My Face, and it's one of the songs that Volkswagen is using in its TV ad campaign. Music by Wilco from the new record called Sky Blue Sky. The band is playing tonight, Tuesday night, in Brooklyn at the Club Warsaw at 8 p.m. Jeff Tweedy is here with us on Soundcheck today. People who are sort of technically inclined are all abuzz about, you know, this, the way this record was made, you know, going back to analog technology, really going for what sounds like a much cleaner approach without so many different layers of other sounds.
Yeah, there's just a lot, there's a lot less overdubbing. I mean, we've recorded all of our records on tape, even in Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, which is perceived by a lot of people to be a very modern sounding Pro Tools type record. It's a lot of tape edits, you know, a lot of like really old school kind of tape editing that is what that record's about. But this record was probably the closest we've ever gotten to really just capturing more ensemble playing and less overdubbing, less layering. We're a six-piece band. We've played a lot together. We love playing together. We love putting the work in, and it's really nice, and it's much more relaxing in the studio when you can be done with a song after you play it, and
right.
instead of like knowing, well, now we've got the drums done, and we're going to have to, you know.
So it's more like the experience of hearing the band playing.
Well, the focus in the band is to try and... have everybody playing, listening to ourselves as one thing, as opposed to just listening to their part. Or, you know, the idea is that you could put up two microphones and record our band in stereo and hopefully have it sound somewhat, you know, like a record, like a mixed record. And we try and play in balance with each other. And it's really, I think it's the most musical way to make a record. I think it's, you know, it's really gratifying to get better at it. And it seems so simple, and it seems like the way things really should be. And it takes a lot of effort.
Well, one of your band cohorts, I think it was John, the bass player, said that you were not getting up every 10 minutes to go out and smoke. that helped the production process along.
Well, that's helped a lot. Yeah. For a lot of reasons. Yeah. But yeah,
So was there like a life change, a lifestyle change for you that went along with the making of this record?
Well, I quit smoking 2 years ago, and you know, 3 years ago I had a fairly well documented stint in rehab. Dealing with painkiller addiction, and I had some other anxiety issues that were pre-existing. So all of that stuff has been managed and maintained better than I've ever been able to in my life. So yeah, I think all of that contributes in a lot of really practical ways, kind of like what John said, not even having to get up every 10 minutes, you know. And probably less has contributed less than a lot of people would like to believe, given the existing rock mythologies into the creative process.
So that's kind of where I was going at the beginning when I asked what the big difference was. So you don't hear a major difference. You hear a lot of consistency over the last three records. It's the same band. It's the same guys. And if you've, been able to clean up your act, that doesn't come out in the way the album sounds.
Well, I don't think I've ever been able to be really productive when I was suffering, you know, debilitated in a lot of cases from either, you know, panic disorder or addiction. Either one of those things sounds really good, and it makes for good ink in terms of like what people like to read about and how they like to think what goes into the creative process, right? But I think it's good to know and be familiar with those things. You know, as an artist, I think that to try and understand suffering is probably a good, healthy goal.
You don't recommend it as a working practice.
I balk at the idea that artists suffer any more than anybody else. Yeah.
Jeff Tweedy is my guest from the band Wilco. Here's more from the record called Sky Blue Sky.
You still love me, maybe you don't. Either you will or you won't. Maybe you just need some time alone. I will try to understand. Everything has its plan. Stay right for you.
Either Way is from the album Sky Blue Sky, the latest from the band Wilco, lead singer and guitarist Jeff Tweedy, although most of the guitar, I guess, at least the lead guitar stuff, is being played by Nels Klein on the new record.
Yeah, that is correct. I have a few leads here and there. Nels cracks the whip every once in a while and insists that I do some stuff. I don't know why.
gee whiz, you know, who would expect a guitarist to say that sort of thing?
Yeah.
But there definitely seems to be a lot more guitar solo. And again, I mean, if people are constantly telling you they're hearing 70s stuff in the music, maybe some of us are. And I think one of the things is the guitar solos at the end of songs. You know,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I must be living under a rock, or I just listened to too many old records, or I don't know. I've never heard it as being a fashion thing. You know, I just think it sounds good. And as a band, I think we react much more instinctually to what sounds good, as opposed to what, I don't know, we think people are gonna, you know,
expect.
Look down their nose at, or you know.
But you're playing with expectations too. I mean, and you have been pretty much throughout the course of these last few records.
I don't know. I don't know if that's ever been a super conscious thing. I mean, it certainly any time. Well, I don't know. I've come to the conclusion that any record that Wilco would make is going to play with someone's expectations. We've been fortunate enough to have a fair amount of people listening, and all these people have come at the band at different times. Some people have come through Mermaid Avenue Records with, you know, Woody Guthrie lyrics, so they're expecting something. We've been very ambiguous about what our goals are and what how we define ourselves. I think it's much more expansive for us.
Mm. You know? Here's a little bit more from the album Sky Blue Sky. Side with the Seeds has some nifty guitar playing that Nels contributes towards the end
shred.
Of the song.
Shredding is what it's called.
Let's hear him shred.
If you side with me,
Side with the Seeds, a little bit of Nels Klein's guitar playing there. Jeff Tweedy reduced to rhythm guitar, at least for the end of that piece.
Happily so.
The album's called Sky Blue Sky. Jeff, let me come back to something you were talking about before. The reason that there was such a good start sales-wise for this record had nothing to do with the TV ad. Despite what Volkswagen claims, the ads came out after the record was released.
Oh, I don't know if Volkswagen claims to have anything to do with, but yeah, the ads certainly were after the record had come out.
You mentioned that people could hear the record on the internet, which is a great thing, and yes, probably did give it a big boost, but it also put the record out there, you know, on the internet where people could, you know, file share, you know, swap it and stuff. You've talked a lot about copyright and the internet and all that stuff in the past few years. What is your position? Is it a double-edged sword, and how do you deal with
it? If I'm looking at it from the standpoint of being a businessman, I have a lot of anxiety, and I can see it as being a double-edged sword. If I look at it from the standpoint of being a musician and someone who's creating something and with the idea of communicating, there's no question that what I should be focused on is the idea of someone listening to our music. And I think that that side of, I think that side should always lead. I think the side that's the creating should always lead. And I think Wilco wouldn't be where it is today, have had the successes we've had if that side wasn't leading. So in other words, I don't think we should expend any energy to prevent people from hearing our music. I think we should encourage people to hear our music. And the internet is a a really good place for people to hear our music, you know.
Well, you know, right now around the world there are people tuning into the internet and they're not hearing anything because of the day of silence, at least here in the United States, where webcasters, including our own WNYC2 stream, have gone silent for the day to protest the, you know, the huge rise in internet copyright royalty rates, which stand to benefit you as someone who makes his living with music. But creatively, it sounds like you might be more in league with the broadcasters, the webcasters.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not as versed on this issue, to be honest with you. I just like want it to be, I think that the, for a lot of reasons other than just listening to my own music or having, being benefited by our own music being played on the internet, I think that the internet's got to remain a source of free speech and being able to hear things.
Well, I mean, I guess that's really the heart of the issue. Is, you know, one side sees the internet as a way to get the word out, get the music out, give people a chance to hear it. Another side sees it as, you know, one of the few profit making enterprise is left to the emerging artist or even the established one. So, big question. Let me end with a small one. How did you become the voice of God, or Gotti, as I guess the character is called on the Comedy Central Little Bush show?
Well, I guess the creator of the show is a fan of Wilco and. Wanted a very laid back sounding God, maybe a sort of a laconic, you know, type of God. I guess maybe you'd heard me speak enough to know that I have a lot of trouble sounding much, you know, too excited. So maybe I fit in.
Well, that'll be July 18th, the Comedy Central cartoon Lil Bush featuring the voice of Gotti, which will be that of Jeff Tweedy. Lead singer and guitarist from the band Wilco. The album's called Sky Blue Sky. The band is playing tonight at Warsaw, the club in Brooklyn, at 8 o'clock. Jeff, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck.